What do you think is the biggest challenge that students today face?
The biggest challenges students face today in terms of education in general?
Yes.
That's a really good one. I think that from my experience, because that's the thing is all students are gonna have vastly different experiences, but I think a commonality amongst all of them is dealing with pressure. The pressure of doing well, societal expectations for what students are supposed to accomplish while they're in college is just enormous, and we really need to figure out a better way to mollify students' worries about the future and help them realize that they're gonna do fine. They can, through hard work, get anything done, and that they have a lot of support. But I know that when I was coming up, whether it be primary education, secondary, or even into college, just feeling an enormous amount of pressure to not fail. And I think that that's a huge problem facing most students nowadays. And as a teacher, it's my job to assure kids that they're gonna be fine and do a great job.
So is there a way you organize your classroom to avoid this pressure? Are there activities that you make students do?
No, in terms of activities in the college classroom, you really can only do like organized activities in smaller classes, and thus far I've only taught larger surveys. But how I kind of get around that just overhanging sense of dread of being in a college classroom is being personable, being able to just show students, that I'm just, a young guy who has no sense of wanting to be harsh or punitive towards students who don't pass or do well, and I'm there to help. Whether that's through telling jokes or, belittling myself, trying to be as open and genuine as possible. I think when students know who you are, they're more willing to trust you and learn from you, and that kind of, again, lifts that pail of anxiety, I think.
Okay. I was also going to ask you, what do you think are qualities of an excellent or memorable teacher that you've had, and how do you think that teacher has been memorable?
Well, my favorite teacher that I had whenever I was an undergrad in particular was Dr. Andrew Torgett here at the University of North Texas, and one thing that he exuded was confidence in his own work, but also confidence that I was going to be able to do well in his class. And I think regardless of where we were academically or in terms of our skill set for being in a history environment, Dr. Torgett does an excellent job of just letting students know that he's there to help, and that everyone, as long as they hold themselves accountable as well, are gonna do just fine in his class. Dr. Torgett, I try to, emulate a lot of what he did as a teacher, or does as a teacher, in terms of his just level of energy is always through the roof. Genuine interest in his work is evident, and everyone wants to learn from him. And the way he grades exams, I think, is very appropriate. It's not super harsh, but at the same time, it gets the point across that, hey, maybe we can do a little bit better. Here's how. Really, everything I learned about being a good teacher comes from Dr. Torgett and others, obviously, but Dr. Torgett has left a very large imprint on me as an educator.
So other than, your philosophy of shared accountability that you got from him and his confidence in the way that he teaches, what other qualities do you think make a good teacher?
Good qualities for being a teacher. Let's see. I think patience is so important, especially for me. I remember, math has never, ever been my strong suit. And my favorite math teachers growing up were those that were willing to sit there and be patient. And I think the same thing goes for history. Some students just either from a lack of interest in history or just they don't quite understand how to, frame concepts in history right. It takes a very understanding and patient teacher to sit there and walk you through those steps and not get frustrated or angry. And that's an excellent quality for a teacher beyond being confident, being personable, being patient. Those are like the qualities I think for teachers. It obviously you need to be an expert in your field. You need to stay on top of what's going on in your field. and you need to be aware of what you, you know, what you can say in the classroom and what you should probably try to avoid, as so to, you know, not make students feel uncomfortable. But again, just I think all those qualities meshed together make a very capable teacher.
Yeah, I know you spoke about grading and the way in which you can grade that's not too stern. How do you manage your time, like, to get all your teaching activities done on time within a schedule?
Oh, it's hard. I feel it right now in my classes that I'm teaching right now, or my class that I'm teaching right now. You know, finding that balance between getting the material done, letting students know what they need to know, and balancing that out with the anecdotes that make history so interesting and so human, right? And so right now I'm lecturing about Andrew Jackson, and if you remember from my class last semester, you know, he's a very controversial figure, but I try my best to make him as human as possible. And there's also a lot of things that he does during his presidency that are very important to the early shaping of American history for so many different peoples, bad and good. And so that's really a big struggle, is just balancing out anecdotes with getting the material in that students need for the exam. In terms of like grading and stuff, I mean, it's, I, because of the challenges that I have, it takes me longer to get my grading in. But ultimately I don't want to speed up my grading process just so I can be done, potentially at the expense of my students. Every student deserves your undivided attention. It is a job as an educator to give all of their students as much attention as they need. But it's always a challenge, and I think that more and more administrators are expecting almost too much from teachers in terms of how many students you're actually teaching, or in terms of what their expectations are for what you should be teaching, and that's something that I think that many teachers in the future are going to have to deal with.
I mean, personally, I thought you were able to grade on time.
Well, that's because I put in a ton of time in behind the scenes.
I guess. So, would you be able to describe like the worst lesson you ever thought? And like what you think you learned from that?
So, the worst lesson I've ever taught, or the worst lesson I've ever experienced?
It could be both. You can talk about both.
The worst lesson I've ever taught was my first time lecturing ever. the first time I ever lectured in one of my classes, for my class in particular, was, I guess, the fall of 2016. Yeah. My first lesson, I was so nervous. I was talking fast. I don't know if I made any sense. The colonial period at that time was something that I knew I could teach, but it wasn't something I was really well versed in. And so I didn't really know all those anecdotes that really draw students in. I was just trying to get out all the information I thought they needed for the exam, and I don't think it came out clear. And so that's probably the worst lesson I've ever done. And you know what, I kind of, when I got home later that day, I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna be such a terrible teacher. But then I kind of calmed down and I was like, okay, I can do this. And next I'm talking about, you know, early Anglo immigrants to the United, or to the North American colonies, you know, talking about like Massachusetts Bay and Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I calmed down, I prepared more, you know, not that I hadn't prepared less before, it's just, I did what I needed to make myself feel comfortable in the classroom. And I just told myself, look, you have to be the example for everyone, and you have to be confident in your abilities, because you're the only one that matters to. So that's how I rebounded from that. In terms of the worst lesson I've ever engaged with, I've had a lot of bad lessons that I've engaged with in terms of like other teachers. And again, those teachers were not patient. They didn't care. They were apathetic, and they didn't come across as genuine. And again, it's almost as if the bad experiences are what make you more wary as a teacher, because you're like, I don't want to be that. Almost more so than what the good lessons that you've experienced.
Yeah, I definitely agree that, you know, you can tell when a teacher cares and when it's just...
It's a job to them, right? And I think when you're a teacher, yes, it's your job, but you love it. And if you don't love it, it's going to affect your students. And that's not fair to them.
Okay, can you describe your planning process for your lectures and how you think you're able to show that you care for students through the way that you plan?
Sure. When I first started teaching the first and second half of U.S. history, I really spent a long time developing the lesson, going over my notes, hours, just reading, looking over my notes and memorizing, because again, I really don't use notes in class. Like, I really can't because of the way my vision is. And so I had to prepare assiduously for every single lesson. And I think ultimately it's made me a better teacher, because now I just need to glance at notes for like 10 minutes before the lesson and I'm ready to go. But I even now I still tweak my lectures, make sure that you know, everything makes sense, and try to add more material that I know students are going to want to hear about, and kind of remove some of the stuff that I may be interested but I know students aren't. But in terms of time and preparation, it used to be hours to prepare for classes. Now it's, you know, 30 minutes or so to get ready to lecture. But I know that that'll change moving forward as I add more and more classes to my repertoire and begin to teach upper level classes and stuff like that.
I agree. So if most of the students in your class had failed an assignment, test, or project, mm-hmm. how would you respond to that, knowing that you've put in the best that you could?
Well, initially it's like very frustrating, and it feels like such a letdown. But a good teacher doesn't walk into the room and say, "You all are awful. How could you fail my exam that I prepared, that I personally put in so much effort into and making, creating, and preparing you for?" Rather, you know, it's good to let students know that you're upset that they didn't do as well as they could have. But at the same time, holding oneself accountable, always realizing there's always something you could have done more to help your students do better on the next exam. And just make it known to students that, again, as a part of shared accountability, the teacher has to hold themselves accountable to prepare the students. The students have to hold themselves accountable for that preparation to do as well as they want. And making that known, like any good leader in general, you want to make it feel as if it's both parties are in this together. And really, you know, almost every semester I've taught thus far, the first exam always goes poorly, always, without fail. And I think that just goes for most college classes. The first exam, students are just so anxious. They don't know what to expect, right? But really, without a few exceptions, I mean, with a few exceptions, the second exams are always better. And then the finals, my students just crush it, because everyone, you know, knows that I genuinely care. I don't enjoy failing students, and that everything is going to be okay. And I think that that means that I'm doing my job decently enough. But yeah, it is very, it's very sobering as a teacher who thinks they are good whenever they have a class that just collapses in upon itself. But a good teacher rebounds, and so do their students, and it's how you get through it.
I think a very big important part of, like, you know, getting everyone to pass mm-hmm. is, you know, the fact that everyone has different learning styles.
Yeah.
How have you addressed different learning styles, and how will you continue to in the future?
That's something that's really hard to do in a big survey. Again, you have 120 students in your class, and to appeal to, what, you know, visual, auditory, like feeling, and the other one. But like, it can be very difficult to appeal to all of those senses. And so really, thus far, I've just kind of tried to make lecturing as accessible to everyone as possible. And for students who can't really pay attention to class, I'm very open. I allow them to record lectures through their phones or what have you. I always make sure that I have PowerPoint slides that really convey what we're talking about for those who are very visual. But I haven't really had to deal too much with that. In terms of like students who struggle in my class, I make it very much known to them that maybe lecturing just isn't how they're supposed to learn. But I let them know, come talk to me in person, and then we'll go through it through different means. Also, there's, you know, SI resources and other learning tutor programs here on campus that students can also, you know, go attend, and they can learn in those different ways as well. But as a lecturer of a big classroom, it's hard to appeal to all learning styles, but I haven't had too many problems with that thus far. No students have come up to me and said, "I'm more of a, you know, hands-on type of learner, you know, appeal to me." I haven't really had that.
Okay. That's understandable. So what do you feel like you would hope that your student has learned after, you know, spending a year in your class?
That history is not just a bunch of random facts cobbled together to make a timeline. History is understanding humans in the past and the why they made the decisions that they did, and understanding that human beings since day one haven't changed. The societies around them have. And I think it's very important to understand those, why those changes occurred, why humans make the decisions that they do, and, you know, by learning history, can we prevent history from repeating itself? I mean, in some ways, yes, but in other ways, no. Humans are going to always make the same mistakes. We can just try to mitigate the consequences of those mistakes as best we can. But as long as students leave my class thinking, wow, I have a greater appreciation for what American history is, good or bad, right, then I've done my job. And I think for the most part, every semester, a vast majority of my students leave with that feeling. You know, they don't have to love history at the end of my class, but it's been very enjoyable for me. And I've also had a number of students say, you know, I'm becoming a history major because of you. And, you know, I didn't mean to ruin their life like that, but I very much enjoy that.
I definitely agree. I feel like that is very much how I felt after our class. Well, thank you so much, Brian, for doing this interview. It's been an honor to talk to you about your teaching experience and your life and just how you're going to grow and the growth that you've made as a person.
Awesome. Thank you so much for interviewing me, and you're going to do great in your future as well.
Thank you.